How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 111, Juan de Oñate and the Foundation of New Mexico, Part 2. As we are telling another story of conquistadors and exploration, before starting today, I thought I would mention a documentary I watched recently. Impossible Possible, The Amazon 5000 Story. Using footage taken by the participants, as well as interviews with those participants, Impossible Possible, The Amazon 5000 Story, tells the story of a charity expedition which took place about 12 years ago. Organized by a larger-than-life Israeli-American, the plan was to walk from the Pacific coast in Ecuador across the Andes and along the length of the Amazon River to the Atlantic. It was all supposed to be for charity, and the story is extremely entertaining, although it's not always an easy watch. I don't want to give too much away, in case you want to watch it, but the reason I mention it is because the expedition leader turned out to be quite mad. As I watched it, I couldn't help but be reminded of the types of characters who led the Spanish conquests, the Pizarros, the Corteses, and the Oñates. Now, he obviously didn't partake in any conquests or commit any massacres, but there is something about his self-centered determination which I found strikingly familiar. His goal was self-publicity and self-advancement, and he doesn't appear to have cared who or what got in the way of that. Be it expedition members, local people, the challenges of nature, or even governments. He is clearly exceedingly tough, willing to endure almost any privation, just as the conquistadors were. He was more than willing to take great gambles to achieve his aims. As I said, I have got to know the personality types of the conquistadors fairly well now, having researched so many of their stories. And it's not just the South American setting and the adventure on foot through difficult terrain which made me think of them. I really think this guy is the closest look at what it would have been like being around the conquistadors. So, when we left off last time, Oñate had led his men to what is today northern New Mexico. He considered this only the beginning of the territory which he hoped to bring into what was already being referred to by the same name, and he had requisitioned a pueblo there to be San Juan, his capital, at least for now. It was 6 months since he left the northernmost Mexican settlement, Santa Barbara, and he was currently stopping to consolidate and establish himself. He didn't intend to wait there for too long, however, and he was not idle. At the end of last episode, we talked about how he sent soldiers out to explore their surroundings, and now he also established another settlement named San Francisco. The settlers there set about digging ditches so that it could be irrigated, and the beginnings of a farming economy could be created. San Francisco doesn't survive, and we don't know exactly where it was. Once Oñate felt secure enough about his colony's short-term stability, he set about trying to ensure its long-term success. The route he took up from Zacatecas was known as the Camino Real, the Royal Road, one of many Camino Reales which crossed Latin America and connected disparate settlements. The path he then established from Santa Barbara to this new colony became the extension of this road, connecting it all the way down to Mexico City. This was a long and arduous journey, however. The section north of Santa Barbara was hardly a road yet, having only been travelled once by Oñate and his men, while even the section to the south went through empty desert country. The ocean, then, would be vital for connecting New Mexico to the rest of the Spanish Empire, and thus ensuring its viability. At least this is what Oñate had decided. Now we know that he was a long, long way from any ocean, but hardly anything was known to the Spanish about the land they were claiming. Oñate hoped that by travelling to the west he might reach what they called the South Sea and establish a port which could supply the colony. Hopefully it wouldn't be too far. The name South Sea is another example of this lack of geographic knowledge. Back in the episodes on Balboa and Panama, we told the story of how he became the first European to find a land route across the Americas to the Pacific. The geography of Panama is such that the Pacific was indeed to the south of the Caribbean coast from which he left, but obviously this is an anomaly, as the Pacific broadly runs along the west coast of the Americas. The Spanish knew this by now, but it appears that they were still calling it the South Sea at this point. When Oñate eventually does reach the Pacific, we will encounter another amusing geographical error, but this won't take place for a while. Oñate would not reach the Pacific on this occasion. Perhaps he would have given up on the idea if he knew just how far away it was. Indeed, he will get caught up in the event for which he is most infamous. He had sent word to two of his captains to follow him on his search, leaving it for them to catch up while he went off ahead. He passed through a pueblo named Acoma, where he was welcomed, he thought, and taken up to the highest point of the cliff face on which the town was carved. With hindsight, the Spanish will speculate that this was an attempt to trap him using deceit. It might have been, but we can't know. We only have Spanish accounts to go on, and it will be hard to get to the bottom of Acoma's motivations. A certain amount of speculation is required, and different books I have read while researching this episode put their emphasis on slightly different aspects of the records. Although the Spanish had not spent time in Acoma before this, their demands for food elsewhere would probably have been well known. Apparently at San Juan one morning, the indigenous population had become agitated due to a lack of rain. They had prayed to their gods and still no rain had come, which would mean that their crops would fail. Given that we have seen this story play out several times in different parts of Latin America, I am inclined to suspect that a lack of food, partly inspired by drought, combined with Spanish demands for what there was, drove the Acoma to hostility. It may simply be, however, that they were innately hostile to these outsiders encroaching on their territory. Oñate passed on, but when the first of the captains following him reached the Acoma later, the people there had laid a trap for him, a concealed drop hole on the track. The captain had fallen into it and been injured, but he had escaped. It seems he was travelling alone, or at the very least, he was alone by the time he reached Oñate. All of this had taken place during a snowstorm, and he had been forced to conceal his tracks from the chasing Acoma by wearing his shoes backwards to send them in the wrong direction, or so he claimed, and to eat whatever he could find. Oñate had stopped to wait out the storm in Hawicul. You might remember that place from De Coronado's story, and it was only this stopping that allowed his captain to reach them and be rescued. This would turn out to be a relatively minor part of the story, however. Oñate decided to pause so that the other captain, with his contingent of soldiers, could catch up, and so that the worst of the weather could pass. The reinforcements never arrived. Eventually he put the search for the ocean on hold, and turned back to see what was going on. It turned out that the second captain had also been ambushed by the Acoma. He and 10 other Spanish soldiers had been killed. We know for a fact from the survivors that a demand for food was the spark for this particular attack. Oñate avoided Acoma as he rushed back to San Juan to organize his revenge. He took with him a considerable proportion of the soldiers in New Mexico. Oñate was determined to respond for several reasons. If Spanish accounts are to believe, he was apparently personally affected by the news, reacting by crying and praying. He seems to have been shocked, which does seem a little strange given that he was a man of 50 who had spent some of his youth engaged in frontier battles and had now come to this territory prepared for battle if it proved necessary. The Spanish argued that this was a revolt and a betrayal, as they believed that they had secured agreement from the Acoma, that they were now subjects of the Spanish king. He gathered together the priests and asked them if the apparent acceptance of the Spanish king meant that they could be punished in the way that would happen to any other Spanish subject. The priests decided that yes, it did. Finally, in Oñate's mind, there was also the fear that this might lead to other pueblos uniting to drive them out. The indigenous people of San Juan gave them further reason to worry about this, when they said that they had heard news of such an attack being planned. Guards were placed at the entrance to the settlement, and the wives of the soldiers were organized into a constant watch from the roofs of the houses. In the end, no attack came. Oñate sent 70 soldiers, over half of those available, and each kitted out with the best armor and weapons they had available, to take revenge on Acoma. He himself did not lead the attack. They brought horses as well, but these were less useful, given that Acoma was built on the top of steep cliffs. Defensively, it presented similar challenges to a medieval European castle. They would have to find a way of climbing up and breaching the natural fortifications.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The people of Acoma were ready for battle, and they used their higher ground to shoot arrows and throw rocks at the Spanish. The Spanish kept their distance and used the first day to ride around the mesa 3 times, looking for the easiest way of climbing it. They found a fault in the cliffs, which might offer a way up. It was narrow and steep, but if the defenders could be distracted, they might be able to scale it. The next morning, the majority of soldiers were sent to the main entrance, so that the Acoma would think that this was how they were going to attack. A small group of 12 snuck around the other side to implement their surprise plan. There were many more defenders, This is again something we've seen played out over and over during the conquests of Latin America. The plan worked, and the 12 soldiers managed to reach the top before being noticed. Their armour and guns were enough to allow them to hold the position at the top of the pathway and inside the village, so that the rest of the soldiers could abandon the attack on the main entrance and climb up behind them. They even managed to pull two cannons up using ropes and fire them into the village at close range. Despite having breached the defences, they were up there for 3 days before the battle was finally over. Oñate had ordered that they should not hesitate or accept surrender, and so many who did try were killed. At the very end, the last 500 to survive were taken prisoner, and the town was burnt to the ground. Oñate held a trial, and despite the input of at least one of the priests that he should be measured, he wasn't. Every man over the age of 25 had their feet cut off and were then enslaved, though you would imagine that they wouldn't be much use. The women were also enslaved alongside the men and boys under the age of 25. The girls under 12 were given to the priests to be brought up as Christians. The very old were given to the Apache people, but many soon escaped and rebuilt Acoma. This massacre marks the end of what is usually referred to as Oñate's first expedition. It would be a couple of years until he set off again to explore more territory. He spent these intervening years trying to consolidate the colony. While still a distant frontier, the governorship of New León and Castilla was now very much part of the Spanish Empire. That didn't mean, of course, that he had abandoned his plans to expand his territory and find the riches which the Spanish speculated could lie beyond the horizon. He judged that it was wise to make sure that no more indigenous attacks were being organized, rather than spreading their manpower over a wide area. To discourage such attacks, he came down hard on a people known as the Humano, who lived to the south of San Juan. They refused to provide food, and so he went there personally to demand that blankets be handed over. They gave about a dozen and said that this was all they had, but Oñate was not satisfied. He burnt down their village. Later the Humano killed some Spaniards, and Oñate ordered one of his captains to attack another of their pueblos. It was besieged for 5 days before the Spanish got in, killing many and burning this one down as well. A Spanish writer who had been in New Mexico since the beginning says that these attacks on the Humano were as cruel as the ones on the Acoma. But as they were chronicled in less detail, they are less well known, and it's the attacks on the Acoma for which Oñate is most famous. Meanwhile, new settlements were founded, or indigenous pueblos were requisitioned. He decided that one of these, which he named San Gabriel, would make a better capital, and so he shifted his base there. A search for places to mine silver took place, but despite finding a few scraps, nothing too promising was found. Exaggerated accounts were sent back to Mexico and Spain, which make things sound more promising than they were, and a trickle of new settlers made their way up to join the colony. Another small attempt was made to find the Pacific, but nothing seems to have come of it. It was 1601 when Oñate decided to venture out again. He must have felt that his colony was secure enough to do so by this point, or at least that he needed to do something to improve it, because food shortages and hardship still defined the lives of the colonists. Many had decided that they would quite like to give up and go back to Mexico, but Oñate cracked down on any sign of dissent and allowed nobody to leave. At least two were killed as punishment for disloyalty to him. Later descriptions paint him as a tyrant. The main driving force for his expedition appears to have been the arrival of Giuseppe in San Juan, in San Gabriel. I mentioned Giuseppe briefly at the end of last episode. He was the indigenous man who some of Oñate's men had met, living in one of the pueblos, but who was originally from central Mexico. He brought with him two motivations for further exploration. Firstly, the reason he was up there was because he had been part of the illegal Leyva expedition, which Oñate was supposed to be tracking down, and whose leaders he was to bring back for trial. No blame was placed on Giuseppe for being part of this, and he might be able to help find those leaders. Secondly, and once again we are repeating a story we've heard before here, he brought rumours of a grand city, ruled by a rich and powerful ruler. We have even heard the name of this one before, Quivíria, one of the two mythical cities which Coronado had searched for. Whether Giuseppe made it out to be as grand as it was thought to be is unclear. According to a Spanish writer, Giuseppe did describe the city as being big, home to a large population and surrounded by extensive farms. It may be that the Spanish imprinted their own desires of precious metals and riches onto this. I'm going to tell the story of Leyva's expedition here, as it will never be found by Oñate or anyone else. Although it was Leyva who seems to have been held responsible for mounting the illegal expedition, his deputy, Humana, also appears to have been equally responsible. According to Giuseppe's telling of events to Oñate, the only thing we have to go on, they wandered through what is today's Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. They reached Quivíria and were impressed with what they saw, but carried on northwards. A few days later they found themselves on the Great Plains, and although they found vast herds of buffalo, they encountered no more indigenous settlements and no great empire. At this point, Leyva and Humana had fallen out. Humana asked Leyva to come see him in his tent and stabbed him to death. Then he led the expedition to a great river, so big the men were unwilling to cross it. Giuseppe and some of the other indigenous Mesoamericans deserted, but only he had survived. He was taken captive by the Apache, but managed to escape after a year. He did not know what had happened to Humana and the rest of the expedition after that. Our best guess, based on what Oñate would later hear from other indigenous people, was that they had been attacked and killed. Whatever happened, they were never heard from again. Giuseppe's desertion, however, left the story unfinished, and although Leyva was dead, Oñate still wanted to find the rest of them. Probably more inspiring, however, was the story of Quivíria, as well as the general desire to expand his territory. Giuseppe is not cited as saying this, and it's not clear where he got this from, but Oñate wrote that he believed that beyond Quivíria was a place where blonde European-looking people lived in a manner similar to those people back in Europe. The two myths appear to have become intertwined. A great civilization existing to the north, and the possibility that Humana had found them and was living among them. A final background incentive to explore, more of a faint hope than a driving motivation, was the slim possibility that the American continent might not extend as far north as we know it does today. If this was the case, then a new sea route would be waiting to be discovered, between the Atlantic and the Pacific, thus providing a much easier path than sailing all the way around the south of Argentina. This would greatly facilitate trade and expansion, and the Spanish king would be very pleased to be the first to take advantage of it. If such a route did exist, and it wasn't too far north, it might even provide Oñate with a place to build a port and connect his colony with Spain. The search for a northwest passage will go on for centuries, with the British taking up the task much later on. We know now that this route only barely exists. It's far to the north of Canada, and is frozen over for most of the year. It will therefore prove to be irrelevant to our story. But not knowing this, apparently it was in the back of Oñate's mind. So Oñate prepared to set out again, following the path of Leyva and Humana, on yet another quixotic expedition to find a non-existent civilization. But that will have to wait until next episode. If you've enjoyed today's episode and you feel like helping out, one thing which is really useful is if you could leave a review wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps new people to discover the show. You can also sign up to become a Friends of the Podcast and get access to one extra episode every month for just $2 per month. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's done this already, and thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and produced by me, Max Argent, edited by Alex McNamara. If you want to become a friend of the podcast and gain access to a bonus episode each month, as well as helping to support the running of the show, there's a link with information about how to do this in the episode description. The podcast can also be found on Facebook and Twitter by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. Here, I post updates about new episodes, as well as interesting articles I find about Latin American history. Thank you for listening.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.